Now we're holding on page Nunhei in Tainis, the very top of the page, middle of Ois Lamed Aleph. We learned previously a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Where does the world's supply of rainwater come from? Rabbi Eliezer says that it comes from the oceans, that the water evaporates and then and forms clouds, and then it falls from the clouds. Rabbi Yeshua says it comes from the Mayim Ha'Yonim. It comes from, on the second day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, Hashem separated the waters. You have Mayim Tachtonim and Mayim Ha'Yonim. There's Mayim Ha'Yonim up there, and Rabbi Yeshua says that's where the rain comes from. And the Gemara was discussing various details within that and where each of them learns their opinion from. So the Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodatanya. According to which of them does the following Braisa go? The Braisa says, Mayim Ha'Yonim and Mayim Ha'Yonim Tluim. The upper waters are hanging there because of Hashem's word. They're not resting on anything. There's nothing physical for them, that nothing physical that supports them. They're staying there like in a pool, and they're staying there because Hashem told them to be there. Operei Sehen, and the fruit of them, the outgrowth of them, Meg Shamim, is the rain that we get. In other words, Shanema, Mitri Ma'asecha, Tisva Oretz. The pasuk says the earth is satiated, is satisfied with the fruit of your hands. So, in other words, we're meant to understand that Rashi says, just like we say by certain mitzvahs, that Peter saying, in other words, there's dividends of them in this world, but then the entire thing of it remains la'olam haba. The same way over here, you have there's a pool of water in Shamayim, which is where the Mayim Elyonim, and the peiros of it, the dividends of it, is what falls for us as rain. And meanwhile, none of the actual water that's up there is lost, and none of it, the aquifer over there, so to speak, up above, is not getting any smaller. So which of these opinions does that follow? Command to Rabbi Yeshua. That would apparently be like Rabbi Yeshua, who said that the world gets its water from the Mayim Helyon. What would Rabbi Eliezer answer? How would he understand that? How would he understand that statement and that pasuk? He would say, Ahuba Maisi Yadav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ksiv. That pasuk is talking about how Hashem made things in the first place. Marshall says, Marshall brings a different girsa, Bibriyose Shal Olam Ksiv, that it's referring to the creation of the world. Either way, it says it means the same thing, that Hashem created in the first place that there should be water to satisfy, to slake the thirst of the earth. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying, on an ongoing basis, it comes from the water and the oceans and the other bodies of water evaporating. But to begin with, Hashem created. Rabbi Eliezer agrees, of course. It says right there in the pasuk that Hashem put up Mayim up above. So Rabbi Eliezer is saying, yes, Hashem did create that, and there is a, and the world does benefit from that. But as far as the main water for the main, so the purpose of that, Hashem created rain, Hashem created water in general in order to satisfy the earth, but not necessarily we're talking that it comes specifically from the Mayim HaYonim. In other words, you would say Prima Secha means in general, Hashem, you created water. And it has the function, and of satisfying the earth by raining on it. But it doesn't say anything about where it comes from. So the Gemara continues. Keman Ozla Hodichtiv. What about this that it says in another pasuk? Mashka Horim Mal Yosef. The pasuk says Hashem waters the mountains from his upper stories, from his upper chambers, which is the first half of that pasuk. Prima Secha Tisparet. Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan Mal Yosef Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Yochanan says the word Me'al Yosef over here means from the upper chambers of Hashem. So what does that mean? In other words, Rashi says without Rabbi Yochanan's statement, we would have thought what it means is Hashem stands there in Al Yosef in the upper chambers and sends down water to us. You wouldn't know where the water itself is coming from. Rabbi Yochanan clarifies that it means there's an upper chamber over there which contains water, and Hashem sends it down to the earth. So who does that go according to? Command to Rabbi Yeshua. That would go according to Rabbi Yeshua, who says that the world is getting from Mayim Elyonim. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, we would have said that no, it's coming from Mayim Tachtonim. Yad Yosef makes a point over here. He brings that the Mayim Elyonim is complete chesed, and therefore that's where when rain falls as Gishmei Brocha, then it comes from there. So that's what it means when the pasuk praises Hashem, Mash Tahor Mal Yosef, that Hashem waters the earth from his upper chambers. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yochanan is telling us something which fits better with Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, that it means the water itself comes from the upper chambers. Maoshar explains differently, actually. Maoshar refers to a medrash that says, now, like this, we brought before the Pasuk, the Eid Yalam and Aretz, that a mist would come up from the earth, a cloud, and water the whole world, and water the whole world by Ma'aseh Bereishis. The medrash brings on this that Hashem's original plan, so to speak, was that the water would always come from below. Instead of there having to be rain, there would always be the underground aquifers would rise up towards underneath the earth and water the ground from the bottom. Then the Medrash says Hashem decided for a number of reasons not to do that. One of them being based on the pasuk that we're saying over here, Mashkahor and Mal Yosef. If you have like that, then the lowlands are going to get well watered by the underground springs, but the mountains will not because the water is not going to be able to reach that high. So that was one reason why Hashem decided instead there needs to be rain, and that way everything gets watered equally. And the Medrash brings other reasons as well, one of them being that when there's rain, which is unpredictable, then it causes people to look up at Hashem and to realize that everything comes from Him. Anyway, so Maharshal says, without Rabbi Yochanan's statement, you would say that it means Mashkahor and Mal Yosef, that Hashem makes sure that the mountains, in order that they should get well watered, then Hashem makes sure that rain falls on them. That wouldn't necessarily mean that it's coming from an upper chamber in Shemayim. You could still understand it the way Rabbi Eliezer says. That means, okay, of course, rain comes from up above. Everybody can see that. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, where it comes from evaporation from the oceans, so you would say, fine, Hashem set up a rain cycle for that reason, for one thing, in order that the mountains are rained on just as much as the plains. You wouldn't know that the water is coming from an upper chamber over there in Shemayim. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is being mechadish for us. So now that would be specifically according to Rabbi Yeshua. But Rabbi Eliezer, what does Rabbi Eliezer answer? Amalach, he'll tell you, kiven de kasliki lahasam. Fine, once the water goes up there, once it goes up and evaporates and forms the clouds, commander also mahasam dami, then we can call it as if it came from there, even though the individual droplets of water actually came from evaporation. And he proves that. De'iloi temahochi, after all, if you're not going to say like that, if you're going to say that things are called from Shemayim only if they originate there, not if they temporarily were there. What about Hodichtiv? You have a pasuk in the Teuchecha in Kisavo where it says, "Mitar Arzecha Ovak V'Ofer Min Hashemayim." Moshe warns in Hashem's name that Hashem is going to send down the rain of your land will be dust and dirt from the heavens. So what do you mean? How does dirt and dust descend from the heavens? Ella, given to madly lahasam, what it means is earlier in the parak, the Gemara explains, Rashi brings it on the pasuk. What it means is there's going to be very little rain, just enough to get the plants wet. Then there's going to be wind storms, dust storms that raise up the dust, and then it lands, it falls on the plants, which now are, if the plants were dry, nothing would happen. The sand and dirt and whatever that falls on them would just blow right away. Instead, because they're wet from that little bit of rain, therefore the dirt sticks to them and it becomes muddy, and then the plants rot. So Moshe is calling it Matar Arzecha Ovak V'Ofer Min Hashemayim. He's calling it the dirt and dust that comes from heaven, even though it doesn't come from heaven, it comes from earth that's stirred up by the winds. Ela kiven de madli lahasam. The point is, once it's lifted up into the atmosphere, Min Hashemayim Korile, then we can call it that it comes Min Hashemayim, even though each individual molecule of dirt comes from earth. Hachinami kiven de sliki lahasam. The same way, Rabbi Yehuda can say, once the individual droplets of water vapor come from the earth, from the oceans, from evaporation, and they go up to the clouds, Me'al Yosef Korile, it can still be called Me'al Yosef, it can still be called that it's coming from Hashem's upper chambers, but we don't have to say that it comes from that pool of water, the Mayim El Yonim, that are described in Parshas Bereishis. And Maharshal also adds the point over here that, yeah, now you have the pasuk that says specifically about Eretz Yisrael, Limtara Shemayim Tishtamoyim, earlier in the Sugya, when Rabbi Yeshua brought his opinion that the world gets watered from Mayim El Yonim, he brought the pasuk that says about Eretz Yisrael that it drinks of the rain of heaven. Now, Rabbi Eliezer could easily answer, again, that starts out on earth, but then it goes into the clouds, and therefore it can be called the rain of heaven. But Maharshal says he has a more straightforward answer. Precisely because Eretz Yisrael is mostly mountainous, therefore, based on that medrash, Hashem had to make that it's watered with rain. Otherwise, if it was watered from underground, the mountains wouldn't get the full effect of it. So, therefore, sure, we can say when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, it has to get rain from above. And again, since that rain, but that rain comes from what evaporates from earth, as Rebbe Eliezer is saying, rather than Mali Yosef, rather than coming from the upper chambers, as Rebbe Yeshua would have it. Okay, here's another one. Kiman oz lahodr amr Rav Chanina. According to which opinion does the following statement of Rav Chanina goes, that when the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says Hashem gathers in the water of the sea like a nade. Now, on the Pasuk, when it comes to when you have an Oz Yosher, Nitzvuk, Nade Noizlim, Rashi makes the point over there that Nade means a wall. It doesn't mean, Rashi points out, there's a very similar word, Noid, that means a flask, a bag that contains liquids. It doesn't mean that over here, because Koinus Kanade, Rashi points out the same way. So in Oz Yosher, Nitzvuk, Nade Noizlim, it can't mean they stood up like a flask. A flask doesn't stand up, it's soft and floppy. And koinus kaned mehayom also doesn't mean that Hashem puts it into a flask, because then the word koinus wouldn't be appropriate. Rashi explains that it should be machnes kibunoid or something like that. So rather, nade means a wall. Here, on the other hand, Rashi does understand that the word nade is similar to the word noid, meaning a bag that contains liquid, and it means, in other words, that Hashem gathered in when it came time to on the third day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, when Hashem tells all the water, you kavu amayim al makom echa b'seder hayabasha, that Hashem is saying that all the water should gather together as though in a flask, so that the dry land will be visible, and then Hashem put sand around the bodies of water so that they can't cross it. There's a number of places in Tanakh where it mentions that point, that Hashem created that Hashem created sand around the ocean. And the ocean, as much as the waves heave to and fro, and they always look like they're coming to flood the earth, they come to that strand of sand over there on the beach, and then they break against it, and that's it. They can't go any further because Hashem told them not to. So here Rashi is explaining that the word koinus kaned mehayom, Hashem gathers the water of the sea like a nade. Here Rashi explains it means like noid. At the beginning of the Masechta, I mentioned there are a number of achronim that talk about the possibility that maybe Rashi, I'm tainus here, is not actually from Rashi. Maybe this is one of the proofs. Although you do find, even among Rashi's own Purushim, where sometimes he changes his mind, so we don't know. There's a number of arguments that have been brought to bear, among others, that first of all, this kind of thing, where Rashi in this Masechta contradicts what he says in other places. No, they're fakert. Rashi explains the word nade can never mean noid. It always means like a wall. Therefore, for the word nitzvah, k'mo neid noizlam, it's appropriate because it means a wall. And koinus kaned me'ayom, Rashi says, means the same thing, that Hashem gathers together the water like a wall. But here, Rashi is saying kakev, that it means noid. Now, if you have one place, okay, maybe it changes his mind. But when you have again and again, so that's one thing. There's other arguments brought to bear on it as well. The style is much different than Rashi and other masechtas. You find much more in this masechta than you do in others that Tosfos has to give. Push the Pirushim and Pshat. Usually Tosfos gives more analytical explanations. Here they have to give a lot of simple Pshat explanations, which seems to imply that they didn't have a Pirush Rashi before them. So a number of arguments have been brought to bear on that. And then there's counter arguments that say that maybe the core of it is from Rashi and just there it was recopied and then added to and mistakes came in, mistakes crept into it or whatever. Anyway, okay. So Rav Chanina points out when the Pasuk describes that koinus kaned mehayom, Hashem gathers the water of the sea like a nade, whether it means a wall, like Rashi says in Shmos, or whether it means, like Rashi says over here, a flask. Anyway, noisin ba'itzoris tohoimas, Hashem places the deeps, the depths of the water in storehouses, meaning, in other words, again, that Hashem put the sand as a barrier around them that they can't go any further out than that. So Rav Chanina explains, it means me got, why are we calling it oitzros? Me goram lo oitzros, she smalu bar. What is it that causes that the storehouses should be full of grain? Tahomis is the depth, so the fact that the water comes up from the depths and waters the ground. Keman k'Rav Eliezer. Necessarily, apparently, that would be like Rav Eliezer, because according to Rav Yeshua, the tahomis don't really factor into it. It's the rain comes, according to Rabbi Eliezer, yeah, the water comes from the tahomis, from the depths of the oceans, and evaporates and forms clouds and so forth. Whereas according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's coming from Mayim Hel Yonim. So what do the tahomis have anything to do with it? What? Bar means grain. Grain. G-R. Grain. Tavor. Yeah. So Maharsha points out, actually, now the fact is, even when it rains, the fact is also the Gemara mentions later in the Masechta that the underground springs also grow larger. Because of that, you have a drop of rain comes from above, and you have two drops come out from the Tehoim, the three Tefachim rather, coming out from the Tehoim corresponding it. Still, Maharsha says, according to Rabbi Yeshua, if the main thing is it comes milamayla, and only then the Tehoim reciprocates it, then it wouldn't be appropriate to say mi gora ma'otzris shi smalu bor tehoimus, as if the main thing is the Tehoim, when according to him that's only an outgrowth of it. Because you have rain, therefore you have the Tehoim reciprocates and wells up. So it fits better with Rabbi Yezer's opinion. Rabbi Yeshua, so what would Rabbi Yeshua answer? He would say, ahu bibri yasa shalolim, that's talking about not the ongoing rain cycle. This is talking about when Hashem first created the world, where again, like Rashi is saying, he put all the water into the oceans and other bodies of water, and told that you stay here and you don't go out of there without my permission. So that's the note that so not like Rabbi Chanina is doubting that it means the Otsuris in the future are watered from the Tehomus, but rather that we mean the first time when Hashem first created the bodies of water, he put them in Otsuris and said, this is where you're staying and you're not going out of it. Gemara continues on in this vein, talking about the rain and where it comes from. This is actually in the printed Gemara. This actually intersects with the previous discussion. We start out with the discussion of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and then the Gemara brings the different memories of other Chachamim to see which one does it fit with better, according to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And then in the middle of it, the Gemara goes into the next piece about Eretz Yisrael versus the other lands, and then it goes back to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. But anyway, so Tana Rabbanan, Eretz Yisrael Nivres Tchilah. Eretz Yisrael was created first in the world, v'chol ha'olam kula nivrel v'asayf, the rest of the world was created only later. The Rashba has a long explanation over here, and Maharsha explains along similar lines. The point is, in other words, that Eretz Yisrael is the main focus for which Hashem created the world. So Hashem first created it, and then he created the Iker, then he created the Tophel. It also includes the point that Hashem gives special Ashgacha Pratis over Eretz Yisrael, Eina Avaya Lekechaba, Mereshas Hashana Ad Achas Shana, more so than in other places. So therefore, the other places are almost more like an afterthought in Hashem's mind, so to speak. The other places are delegated through Shluchim, as we're going to go on to say over here. Eretz Yisrael is under Hashem's special Ashgacha. So all of that goes with this point, in other words, that Eretz Yisrael is the focus of Hashem's Hashgacha more so than any other part of the world. Iyun Yaakov points out, we know the world was created, B'Shvel HaTorah or B'Shvel Yisrael, Shenikra Horeishis. Well, therefore, Eretz Yisrael, which is meant as a special land, the Jewish people, had to be created first in the same way. If the Jewish people are created, are one of the purposes for which the world is created, then the land where they're going to be able to fulfill mitzvahs most fully has to be created first. Also, Iyun Yaakov points out, you know, it's al derech, like when Hashem, we know that Hashem first created the intense light of Yom Rishon, and then he saw that the world is not worthy for it, so he hid it away. Famously, the Baal Shem Tov says they should hid it in the Torah, which is how tzaddikim were able to see things going on in other parts of the world. Anyway, and then the Eibush created the regular light that we're familiar with. So here, Iyun Yaakov says a similar vein. The Eibush created Eretz Yisrael first with the idea that, in principle, all of humanity should deserve to live there, but they don't live up to it. Therefore, the Eibush had to create the rest of the world for them to be for that to be places to live in. And in fact, when the Jewish people don't live up to living in Eretz Yisrael either, then it's denied to us as well, for the same reason, because it's the Eibush to see that it's not Roy Lishtamish. So that's the idea behind this point of Eretz Yisrael being created first. So again, the idea is, again, the Rashba and Maharsha bring out the idea that the Eibishter's focus of his Hashgacha and everything is much more on Eretz Yisrael than other places. In fact, there's places in Tanakh where it calls Hashem Elokei Ha'oretz, the God of the land. Now, Hashem is the God of the whole world, but he has a special connection with Eretz Yisrael more than any other land. Eretz Yisrael was created first. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Adloi Osa Eretz V'chutzes. The Pasuk describes how the Torah was there before Hashem created the Eretz and the Chutzes. So Eretz means Eretz Yisrael, and Chutzes means all the other lands that are outside of it. By the way, a couple of them before should talk about over here the point. The Gemara mentions in Yuma, Machlokas, whether the world was created beginning from the middle and then extending outward from there. According to that, the Eben Shesia was the first place that was created, or is it the other way around, that the Eben Shesia started at the edges and then brought it all together in the middle? Since it describes that Eretz Yisrael, it's mentioned in a few places that Eretz Yisrael is in the middle of the world, then if we say that the Hashem started from the sides, then what it would mean is he started from the sides of Eretz Yisrael and then worked his way towards the middle and then continued with the other lands in the same way, working from the outside and working in. As opposed to if we say that it's created from the middle first, then Eretz Yisrael, specifically the Eben Shesia, is created first, and then the Eben Shesia coalesces everything around it until he creates the world. So it's the foundation, but yeah, the Gemara mentions in Yoma Machlokas about that, whether in fact that was the foundation, whether everything began from there, or whether it began from the edges and then it was joined together over there. Kind of. Yeah. Tanan Abanan, Eretz Yisrael shoyse b'tchila. Eretz Yisrael is watered first. Rain falls there first. V'chol olam kula shoyse b'soif, and the rest of the world drinks only afterwards. So the idea being, in other words, the Rashba and Maharsha explain, like the Hashem gives first the rain, which is under his direct hashgacha, to Eretz Yisrael, and then like he delegates to the shluchim, to the malachim, or whatever, to give to the rest of the world. The sorim of the shivim omos. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Hanoisin motor apnei oretz." Hashem gives rain on the surface of the earth, and again, eretz unspecified means Eretz Yisrael. V'sheleach mayim apnei chutzis, and then Hashem sends water in all of the outlying areas. So we see, first comes the eretz, then comes the chutzis. Maharsha adds, also, the point is that for the other places, not even called motor for Eretz Yisrael, it's called motor for all the other places. It's mayim. It's like all you have is like the outflow, like you have like the dregs of it that flow, that the what do you call it, what you have, or the overflow goes to the other places. You can't even call it mutter over there. Now, the fact is, Ben Yehoyada points out, we do often see that's not so, that it rains in other places ahead of Eretz Yisrael. So he says primarily what we're talking about is when the Eivishter decides on Rosh Hashanah what's going to be with the rain for the year. First, he decides what's going to be with Eretz Yisrael, and then the rest of the world. So the Gashmi, sometimes it comes out in all world that way, and sometimes not, depending on what the status of the Olam Hazeh Gashmi is relative to Ruchniyistika world. Zal Darach, like actually there's a Sicha, one of the project, Lechut Sicha, Sichas for this week, from Chelek Chav Gimel, that ever talks about the idea that we have all the cures and all of the medical advice that the Gemara gives all over the place, and that the Rambam gives a whole parak of it in Hilchos Deis and Lamaisa. We see that not all of it is effective, and many of them we're not even allowed to do because they're not effective anymore. How does that fit with the Nitzchias of the Torah? And the Rebbe makes the point over there because it really depends. These things are all true, but Ruchniyus, sometimes the world and humanity is on a level that matches, that's in sync with how things are Baruchnius, and then we see that these things are effective Baruchnius, that are effective Gashmius, and sometimes not. So here in a similar vein, when the world is in sync with Ruchnius, then when it's decided, when the Eibishter decides, first rain for Eretz Yisrael, then for everywhere else, then attacker comes in all world like that, but if not, then not. By the way, similar points that Eber Ashab makes at some length in Kuntras Amayim. We talked about it when we were learning the Sechta Rosh Hashanah, where you have a machlokas over there about Adam Nidim, where a person is judged on Rosh Hashanah versus Bechol Yoim versus Bechol Shah. That Eber Ashab makes a point over there at some length that you can have, and all of them are true. And the point is that there's a hashpa that was decided milamayla on Rosh Hashanah for a person, and then every day it's decided, is it actually going to come out or is it going to be blocked someplace in the Olam Asel Yonim for one reason or another? Continues the Gemara. Eretz Yisrael shows a meg shomim. Eretz Yisrael drinks from the rainwater, again from the direct stuff. Everybody else gets from the leftovers, from like what seeps out of it. Moshal Adam Shemagabanes Agvina. It's like when a person is making cheese. The process of cheese is you start out with milk. You put an enzyme into it. You put rennet into it, and then you have the cheese curds that causes the cheese curds to separate from the whey, and then they coalesce into a block of cheese. So noitalos oichol or maniachas apsoilus. So he takes out the food, the cheese that results from it, and he leaves behind the waste, which is the whey. So Maharsha says, in other words, the point is you have three things over here that. You're taking that we're saying the rain in Eretz Yisrael is more, it's first and it's more direct, and it's the main stuff and it's the main thing, whereas everybody else is getting the chances. So therefore, that reflects that the cheese making process, where you have your first taking the food and you're first taking the food, the cheese out, that represents how Eretz Yisrael gets first. Or maniach apsolos, and you leave behind the waste, represents how everybody else is getting the tamtzis and getting it only through a shliach. But like, so in other words, the Baal HaBos himself, the cheesemaker, the cheese is important enough for him to take out himself, whereas the whey he leaves behind, and if anything, he'll delegate it to somebody else to deal with that. Another one, Eretz Yisrael Mashka HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmoy, Hashem waters Eretz Yisrael himself, V'chol Olam Kulei Mashkeu Aydei Shliach. The rest of the world Hashem waters by means of a shliach. Shenema, the same pasuk, Hanosin Motar Apnei Aretz, Hashem gives rain on the surface of the earth, implying that Hashem gives it himself, v'sheleach mayim, but he sends out water apnei chutzas to the outlying areas. In other words, like Hashem sends it out, like Hashem delegates it to a shliach to deal with the rain over there. So in this connection, the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Shor ben Levi, kol ha'olam kulei tamtzisa shogan eden hu shoyse. The whole world then is actually getting from the overflow, from the seepage of what goes to Gan Eden. So in other words, Gan Eden gets the main rainwater, and then the whole rest of the world is getting the overflow, what's left over from that. Now within the world itself, we're saying Eretz Yisrael gets first, but we're saying that even that Gan Eden gets it even ahead of everybody else. Shenemar is the positive of Noho Yotzime Eden, a river comes out from Eden, Lahashkos has gone to water the garden. Now the Gemara explains here in Psachim and in other places that there's Gan and there's Eden. There's two separate things. In terminology of Chassidus, we call them Gan Eden Elyon, Gan Eden Atachton. The Gan, the Gemara mentions in other places, nobody has ever seen. Adam and Chava were in Eden. The other way around. Eden, nobody has ever seen. They were in the Gan, which is in Eden. The Pasuk doesn't call it Gan Eden. The Pasuk calls it Gan Bit Eden, Kedem, implying there's Eden. And then within that, there's a small part that's called the Gan. That's where Adam and Chava were. But Eden is higher than Ayin L'Rosa, L'Kim Zolosecha. Only the Eibishter has seen it. And that's, we talk about in Chassidish terminology, that's Gan Eden Elyon, whereas where Adam and Chava were and where the Neshamas go after 120 is Gan Eden Atachta. And then you have, there's an Omud over there, there's a pillar that they can use to ascend to Gan Eden Elyon, so they're able to reach that level, but it's not such a simple thing. What? Okay, there's Eden, which is beyond that. Okay, I'm fairly certain there's places in Sichus where the Rebbe talks about this point and says that Eden represents is Gan Eden Elyon, but maybe, I don't know. Okay, anyway. So the point is, Rashi says, we're not exactly learning, because after all, that pasuk is talking about the river that comes from the Eden to water the Gan. But the point is, we see that in the same vein, you have it comes from Eden and then waters the Gan. So we see in the same way, then the rain comes to Gan Eden first, and then it goes to everywhere else. So why is that? Tana, we learn in a Braisa, me tamtzis, or me tamtzis, base kur, when you have, for example, the amount of water in a keli that you would be able to use to water a base kur is the area where you can plant a kur of grain. The official definition is 75,000 square amos. If you made a square of it, it would be 270 some amos on a side. It's according to Rabbi Chaim, approximately 400 feet. So you're talking maybe like say, for example, you take an average Crown Heights block is around 700 by 200 by 200 feet. So you're talking about your base core would be about two-thirds of a typical Crown Heights block, say. So the amount of water that would take to water one base core from the tamtzis, from what seeps out of such a container, shows a tarkov, you could water an area where you would grow a tarkov is short for treva kav, two kavim plus another kav, which makes half a saw, because there are six kavim in a saw. The point of a kur contains 30 saw. So therefore, half a saw is going to be 1/60th of a kur. So therefore, we're saying you have a keli that you can use to water a base kur. What's left over in that keli after you finish watering will be 1/60th of the original, and you could use that to water an area of a tarka. In the same vein, since the Gemara is going to go on to say that the world is 1/60th the size of the Gan, then therefore it follows what we were just saying, that you can have that Hashem waters the Gan first, and then, like, so to speak, what's left over at the bottom of the container is enough for the entire world, 1/60th. So the Gemara goes on to say, Tanan Rabbanan, we learned this in Pesachim as well. Eretz Mitzrayim have a dalad meis parsa al dalad meis parsa. Mitzrayim is 400 by 400 parsa. That is a good deal larger than the modern day country of Egypt. It includes probably parts of Sudan and Libya and whatever other countries over there. So that's 400 by 400 parsa. Or Mitzrayim echad misamach b'kush. Mitzrayim in turn is 1/60th of Kush. It's possible that Kush over here means, Kush usually specifically means Ethiopia. It's very possible over here that Kush means Africa in general. Egypt is a portion of the continent of Africa. Maybe it means if you count the continent, the size of the continent as a whole, then Mitzrayim is 1/60th of that. Anyway, the Kush echad misamach ba'olam, that in turn is 1/60th of the area of the globe, which is a little hard to understand because that would make Mephoshim actually make the calculation, and it comes out, actually, the Gemara in Psachim makes the calculation. Rava says in Psachim over there that Shita Alpha Shinin Havi Alma, that the distance from one end of the world to the other is 6,000 parsa. The Gemara compares and contrasts that with the statement over here. If the surface of the earth is 60 times Kush, which in turn is 60 times Mitzrayim, which is 400 by 400 parsa, then the Gemara explains over there in Psachim that the math doesn't work out. So Bepashtos, we're talking about the whole globe. Bepashtos, we're saying Mitzrayim versus Kush, which may mean Africa, versus the whole globe. But the whole globe is a lot less than 60 times the size of Africa or whatever it is you're going to consider Kush to be. So the Gemara points out that it's a little hard to understand the math, but so it's not meant necessarily in a Gashmiistic sense. Again, this is one of those things that has more of a Ruchmiistic meaning, and it means, in other words, like the whole world. Like Kush is bottle relative to the whole world, because bottle b'shishim, and the same in Mitzrayim relative to Kush. Anyway, the olam echad misamach began. The whole world is 1/60th the size of the gan. The gan echad misamach the Eden, which in turn is 1/60th of Eden. The Eden echad misamach the Gehenim, which in turn is 1/60th the size of Gehenim. Nimsa kol olam kulik kisuk deir le Gehenim. So it comes out the entire world is only like a lid of a pot relative to Gehenim. If you consider the volume of a lid of a pot versus the volume of how much the pot itself holds, you're going to realize it's a very tiny amount, in the same way the world is very tiny compared to Gehenna. The Gehenim, now what about Gehenim? Some say that Gehenim has no measure. Now what does that mean? Marsha says, yes, of course it has a measure. We just said that it's 60 times the size of Eden. What it means is, according to that, there's nothing larger than it that you can say that Gehenim is 1/60th the size of X. There's no larger X that you could compare Gehenim to. So in that sense, we can say Ein Lo Shir. The Maharal has a different take on it. The Maharal explains Bechlal that whenever we talk about Gehenim, he says Gehenim means the absolute non-existence. That's like the opposite of so it's almost like the opposite of a Likus, which is everything. But the Gehenim is like the absence of anything. And he explains in many places that's what we mean when we talk about Neshamas being consigned to Gehenim and being burnt over there. It means like they completely cease to exist. So anyway, so over here he says the same thing. It means Ein Lo Shir in the sense, since it's a nullity, it's a non-existence. Like you could compare it almost like to a black hole or something. You can't talk about the size of it because it's the very definition of non-existence. And that means you can't talk about a size of it. The Yesh Omim Eden Ein Lo Shir. Others say that Eden has no limit. Again, the idea being, according to Marsha, the idea would be that there's nothing larger that you can compare to, meaning according to this Manda Omer, according to this Yesh Omim, we would not say that Gehenim is 60 times Eden. Rather, on the contrary, we'd say Eden is the largest thing there is, and therefore there's nothing that you could say is larger than it. According to the Maharal, we would have to say that it means the opposite, that Eden is the absolute existence, it's the presence of Atzmus Mahus, of the Eibishter himself, and therefore you can't talk about any shield. Getting back to the matter of rain, and we said before, we had the drasha before about Otsriseha Malayas, that what is it that causes these storehouses of grain, what causes the storehouses to be full of grain is the underground springs, the underground aquifers, that we said, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Bechlau, all the rain comes from there by means of evaporation. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, we didn't mean that. We just meant that to begin with, Hashem created the world with underground aquifers. So now the Gemara brings a similar drasha in this vein about the relationship between the underground water and the grain and the tavor that grows. So Amar Boshi, my dichtiv, this is the context of this pasuk is talking about Bavel. Yumiya has two long nevuos in his sefer talking about how Bavel, which at that time was the superpower in the world, how they're going to be completely defeated and destroyed. Their city, their capital city of Bavel is going to be a ruin forever, and so on and so forth. And he goes on with the over in these two nevuos, so covering well over 100 psukim, talking about the disasters that are going to hit Bavel because of the way they behaved and because of the chutzpah that, with which they treated the Jewish people, and they treated the Eivishta and destroyed the Beis Mikdash, and so on and so forth. So he says, Sheikhant al Maim Rabim, you Bavel who live by many waters, because Bavel has the two big rivers, Chidekel and Prus. It has they had in those days a whole network of canals all over the country that connected them together most of the time. In the Gemara, when it mentions Nahar this or Nahar that, you have Nahar Malkasava and Nahar Papa and so on and so forth, various rivers, Nahar Da for that matter, that are mentioned in the Gemara most of the time. Those are canals that were dug to join these rivers to each other and to produce a lot of farmland. So the Navi says, Sheikhant Amayim Rabim, you Bavel that live by many waters, Rabas Oitzris, you who have a lot of treasuries. So that means, Rav Oshia says, Mi Gorim La Bavel, Shiyu Oitzrisseh, Malayas Bar, what causes that Bavel's storehouses are so full of grain that it's such a fertile area? Because it lives by great waters, because again it has those two rivers and all those canals and all that. It's a very it's a low lying and well watered area as compared to Eretz Yisrael, which has to largely live off rain. Marshall actually points out an interesting thing. Rashi first brings the end of the pasuk goes bo kitzech amas bitzech. Now the simple meaning of the pasuk is bo kitzech, your end Bavel has come. Amas, because of the measure, like an amma, bitzech, of your wrongdoing, of your dishonesty, like ma betzek inayar gesachidu. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is the Navi is telling her, here, Bavel, you think you're so rich and powerful and invincible because you have all that water and therefore you have such a huge supply of grain and food, and everything, but you should know your end is coming because of all the dishonesty and dishonest gains that you made. Marsha says also he means it as a double meaning as well. The word amas, besides meaning a measure, can also mean like an amas amayim, a canal, a stream of water. And bitzech is related to a word, bitze mayim means swamps. So therefore, the Navi is continuing to say, bo kitzech, your end is coming. The end of what? Amas bitzech, the amos, the canals that you have, and bitzech, and your swamps, all of those are going to dry up and be gone. In fact, nowadays, you know, anybody who remembers seeing things from the first Gulf War and from the second one, for that matter, remembers how dry most of Iraq looks. All these nevuos came true very literally. That all of those the rivers are still there, the Chidekel and the Prus, but a lot of those canals have been destroyed over the years, and the whole place is silted up and dried up, and basically mostly a desert. So what causes that your storehouses were so full of grain and that therefore you thought you're on top of the world? The reason is because you Bavel live by great waters and therefore you thought that that's always going to continue. Omar Rab, so Rab says in this connection, Asira Bavel. Bavel is rich in the sense, the chatzabal and mitra, they're able to harvest, they're able to produce crops without rain because they have enough underground water. They have enough of these rivers and canals and underground aquifers and whatnot that they're able to grow grain even and other kinds of produce even without rain. They don't need rain. Now, I mean, so it has. So we're saying Bavel is rich in that sense. On the other hand, what it means is that al-derech, like with the way the pasuk contrasts Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael, where in Mitzrayim they have the flooding of the Nile every year, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, l'mtarach shemayim tishtemayim, the point is in Eretz Yisrael, therefore, a farmer always has to look up at the Eibishter and daven for rain, whereas on the other hand, in Bavel, we're saying that not. A person could go his entire life not realizing that the Eibishter runs the world because he figures you have the constant supply of water on the ground. Omer Abaya, so Abaya says in this connection, at Naktinan, we have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim, that the reason for that is Tevani, because Bavel is a very swampy area. Tevani literally means where you can drown in it, and where there's a lot of swamps and quicksand and places like that where you can easily drown. Below Yuvshoni, it's not a dry place. So because not just they have all the rivers and whatnot, but it's a very low-lying, Gemara mentions in a number of places that Bavel is very low-lying, or the Mese Mabel wound up over there, for example. So therefore, it's very low-lying and swampy, and therefore, that's why they're able to be so successful with their produce. That's how Rashi explains this Tuvani v'lo Yuvshani. Tosfos gives a different explanation, that it means that that we're saying you're better off being, if you have a choice between living in an area which is very wet and swampy and where you're in danger of floods versus a place which is more dry and you're in danger of drought, you're better off, says Abaya, living in the first kind of place than in the second. So let's say, to put it in American terms, you're better off living in Florida than you are in Arizona, let's say. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, Gimel 7. We have the mitzvah in the Torah of Iskadishnim Ve'yisim Kedoshim. You should make yourselves holy, and you should be holy. And we know that means Kaddish Atzmach HaBemotolof, that a person has to make himself holy and reserved and held back, even with things that are mutter. Even within Yonah Yerushus, you have to infuse them with Kedusha. B'chol Derechecha De'ehu, and this is in fact a mitzvah's Eser Shel Torah. The Alter Rebbe talks about this in Tanya. Earlier than that, Sefer Charedim talks about it at the end of Mitzvah Saseh, famously, that Ramban brings about it at the beginning of Parashas Kedoshim. He understands that that's what the mitzvah of Kedoshim to you means. Anyway, the Rebbe says beyond that, in Chassidus, it talks about that this avodah of Kaddish Atzmach HaMotzolach is what's going to bring the Geula Hasida. Meaning, it's not just enough to learn Torah. It's not just enough to keep mitzvahs. It's not just enough to stay away from things that are also. To bring the Geula Hasida, we also need the Kaddish Atzmach HaMotzolach. The mentality, like what's described in Hayom Yom, and what the Alter Rebbe taught us Chassidim, was meant terminate, that kind of thing that the Rebbe is bringing in a Sicha and Chelik Aleph, is what's needed to bring the Geula. Continuing on halachas of Shabbos, you're not allowed to make musical sounds on Shabbos with a keli or with parts of your body except singing with your mouth. So, for example, that would include snapping your fingers or banging on a table or a board or rattling nuts or a bell or whatever to calm down a kid. Also, it includes clapping or dancing, although the Alter Rebbe brings in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays we're no you do that and nobody's moicha in it. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it, because now that we're coming closer to the time of the Geula, so therefore we're more able to show these kinds of simcha more openly. The official reason for it that's brought in the Noisa Kalim on Shulchan Aruch is because the official reason behind this gzeda is Shemi Yisak and Klei Shir. You might come to fix musical instruments, and there came a point when people are not so expert at fixing them anymore that you're going to be concerned that if you start clapping and dancing, whatever, that you're going to fix them. But the Rebbe talks about in a sicha the deeper reason behind it. Anyway, another example. Now, though, he continues, L'kavod HaTorah, you are allowed to do these things, for example, on Simchas Torah, and even when it comes to calming down a baby, there are yesh matir, and therefore there is reason to be allowed. Now, on the other hand, he goes on to say, when it's not a musical noise, you are allowed to make it. For example, you can knock on a door. But on the other hand, though, you can't, for obviously, you can't use a bell when it's electrical. He's not even talking about that, because such things didn't even exist when the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was written. But he gives an example. You have, for example, these door knockers that are meant to make a particular type of noise. So therefore, you can't use those door knockers on Shabbos. Another example would be, for example, the type of clocks or watches where you pull a string and they chime. You can't do such things on Shabbos or Yom Tov.